entropy. Now you are more coherent energy and less matter, and you have your own enhanced field of light and information that you can draw from to create. Blessing of the Energy Centers Meditation. This meditation has become one of the most popular meditations among our students and has created an impressive number of supernatural results. As I did in the previous chapter, I will give you some basic instructions so that if you choose to do the meditation on your own, you'll know how to proceed. Begin by placing your attention in the first energy center and then move to opening up your attention to the space around this center. Once you can sense this space around the energy center, bless that center for the greatest good and then connect to elevated emotions like love, gratitude, or joy to raise the frequency of this center and also create a coherent field of energy. Do this for each of the seven energy centers in the body, and when you come to the eighth center, a place about 16 inches above your head, bless this center with gratitude or appreciation or thankfulness, because gratitude is the ultimate state of receivership. This center will then begin to open the door to profound information from the quantum field. Now open your focus and place your attention on the electromagnetic energy surrounding your entire body, building a new field of energy. As your body draws from a new field of electromagnetic energy, you become more light, more energy, and less matter, and you raise your body's frequency. Remember, if you are going to create the unlimited, you have to feel unlimited. If you're going to heal in a magnificent way, you have to feel magnificent. Tap into elevated emotion and sustain it throughout the meditation. Once you've blessed each of the energy centers, lie down for at least 15 minutes. Relax, surrender, and let your autonomic nervous system take the orders and integrate all this information into your body. Chapter 5, Reconditioning the Body to a New Mind. In this chapter, we're going to discuss how to do a breathing technique we use before we start many of our meditations. I'm going to explain it in detail here because understanding how this works is vital to your ability to truly change your energy and free your body from the past. As you'll see, the proper use of the breath is one of the keys to becoming supernatural. To get all the benefits of this technique, your knowledge of what you will be doing and why you will be doing it will serve as the foundation for the experience, and so will make the how easier for you, not to mention making the technique more effective. Once you understand the physiology of how this particular breath works, you'll be able to assign meaning to the activity, put more intention behind it, do it properly, and experience all the benefits of using breath to pull the mind out of the body, and then recondition your body to a new mind. Before we start, I want to review the thinking-feeling loop we discussed in Chapter 2, because the concepts are central to the meditation in this chapter. As you will recall, thoughts cause biochemical reactions in your brain that release chemical signals, and those chemical signals make the body feel exactly the way you were just thinking. Those feelings then cause you to generate more thoughts that make you feel the same way you were just thinking. So your thoughts drive your feelings, and your feelings drive your thoughts. And eventually, this loop hardwires your brain into the same patterns, which conditions your body into the past. And because emotions are a record of past experiences, if you can't think greater than how you feel, this thinking-feeling loop keeps you anchored to your past and creates a constant state of being. This is how the body becomes the mind, or, in time, how your thoughts run you and your feelings own you. So once your body becomes the mind of that emotion, your body is literally in the past. And since your body is your unconscious mind, it is so objective that it does not know the difference between the experience in your life that creates the emotion and the emotion you are creating by thought alone. Once you are caught in this thinking-feeling loop, the body believes it is living in the same past experience, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. The body believes it's in the same past experience because to the body, the emotion is literally the experience. Let's say you've had a few difficult experiences in your life that have branded you emotionally, and you've never got over the fear, bitterness, frustration, and resentment those experiences engendered. So every time you have an experience in your external environment that is similar in some way to what happened previously, the experience triggers you, and you feel the same emotions that you did at the time of the first event. Once you feel the same emotion you felt 30 years ago when the event initially occurred, it's quite possible that you will behave in the same way you did at that time, because those emotions are driving your conscious or unconscious thoughts and behaviors. Now those emotions have become so familiar to you that you believe that's who you are. By the time you're in your mid-30s, if you keep thinking, acting, and feeling the same way without changing anything about yourself, the majority of who you are becomes a memorized set of automatic thoughts, reflexive emotional reactions, unconscious habits and behaviors, subconscious beliefs and perceptions, and routine familiar attitudes. In fact, 95% of who we are as adults is so habituated through repetition that the body has been programmed to be the mind, and the body, not the conscious mind, is running the show. That means that only about 5% of who we are is conscious, and the remaining 95% is a subconscious body-mind program. So in order to create something significantly different in our lives, we must find a way to pull the mind out of the body and change our state of being, which is exactly what the meditation I will teach you at the end of this chapter is designed to do. How energy gets stored in the body. Now let's look at how the thinking-feeling loop works in relation to the body's energy centers, especially the first three, the survival centers, where it causes the most problems. That's because most people's thoughts and feelings activate those energy centers. As you'll remember from the previous chapter, each of the body's energy centers has its own individual energy, information, glands, hormones, chemistry, and neurocircuitry, and its own individual mini-brain or mind. Or really, each has a mind of its own. These mini-brains become programmed in the body to operate subconsciously through the autonomic nervous system. In this way, each center has its own energy and corresponding level of consciousness, and each is associated with specific emotions corresponding to that center. So let's say you think a thought such as, "My boss is unfair." Figure 5.1 depicts how thinking that thought turns on a neurological network in your brain. Then you have another thought, "I'm underpaid," and you turn on a second neurological network. Then you think, "I'm overworked," and now you're off to the races. Because mind is the brain in action, if you keep thinking more thoughts along the same lines and you activate enough networks of neurons firing in tandem, in a specific sequence, pattern, and combination, you produce a level of mind which then creates an internal representation or an image of yourself in your brain's frontal lobe. That's where you can make your internal thoughts more real than your outer environment. In this case, you'll see yourself as an angry person. If you accept, believe, and surrender to that idea, that concept, or that image without any analysis, the neurotransmitters, chemical messages that send information between neurons in your brain that produce that level of mind, begin to influence neuropeptides, which are the chemical messengers created by the autonomic nervous system within the limbic brain. Think of neuropeptides as molecules of emotion. Those neuropeptides signal hormonal centers, in this case, turning on the adrenal glands in the third energy center. As the adrenal glands release their hormones, you're feeling pretty ticked off, and you broadcast a specific energy signature through the third energy center that in effect carries the message, "Send me another reason to feel the way I'm already feeling. Send me another reason to feel angry." As this center becomes activated, it produces a specific frequency that carries a particular message. Your brain monitors your chemical state, and the moment you feel angry, it's going to think more corresponding thoughts equal to how you feel. "My boss is such a jerk. I should quit my job. What an idiot driver. My coworker stole my idea. I'm right and everyone else is wrong." It fires and wires similar circuits in the same way over and over again. And if you turn on enough of those circuits, you keep producing that same level of mind. This reaffirms your identity with the same image in your forebrain. And then the limbic brain creates more of the same neuropeptides, which then signal the same hormones from your third energy center, and you start to feel even more angry and frustrated, which then influences you to think more of the same corresponding thoughts. The cycle can go on for decades, whether what you're thinking is justified or not, and then the redundancy of that cycle hardwires the brain into a certain pattern, in this case, the pattern of anger, and repeatedly conditions the body emotionally into the past. The body becomes the mind of anger, so the anger is no longer in the mind that's in your brain, the 5% of your thought that is conscious. But instead, the emotion of anger becomes stored as energy in the body-mind, the 95% of your mind that is subconscious. Because it's subconscious, you're not aware that you are doing this. But that is exactly what is happening. So all that emotion, which was originally created from thought, because all thoughts have a corresponding energy, becomes stored as energy in the body, stuck in the third center, the solar plexus. This stored energy produces a corresponding biological effect. In this case, it could be adrenal fatigue, digestive problems, kidney issues, or a weakened immune system, not to mention other psychological effects like a short temper, impatience, frustration, or intolerance. Over the years, you keep producing the same thoughts that keep signaling the same feelings, and you continue hardwiring your brain into this very finite pattern. And in the same way, you keep reconditioning the body to become the mind of anger. Thus, an enormous amount of your creative energy is stored in the body's third energy center as anger, bitterness, frustration, intolerance, impatience, control, or hatred. What if, instead of feeling angry, you start having thoughts that make you feel victimized or guilty? Life is too hard. I'm a bad parent. I shouldn't have been so rude. Did I do something wrong? If you take a look at figure 5.2, you'll see that the same thing happens. Thinking those thoughts turns on a different network of neurons in your brain. If you fire and wire enough of those networks, you produce a different level of mind, and the brain creates the internal image of yourself that reaffirms your identity, in this case, as a guilty person. You start thinking, God's going to punish me. Nobody loves me. I'm worthless. Once you accept, believe, and surrender to these guilty thoughts without any analysis, the neurotransmitters activating neural networks in your brain influence a different blend of neuropeptides, this time neuropeptides that are equal to those thoughts about feeling guilty. And then those neuropeptides signal a different hormonal center, in this case, the second center. And over time, as you recreate the same loop of thinking and feeling, and feeling and thinking, you're going to begin to store your energy in the body in the second center. This begins to produce a biological effect. Since you feel guilt in your gut, you may start to feel nauseated or sick, or you may experience pain in this area of your body, along with emotions like suffering, unhappiness, or even sadness. If over time you keep feeling guilty, you think more guilty thoughts that fire and wire more neurons that signal more neuropeptides that cause the release of more hormones in the second center. As this happens, you continue to condition the body to become the mind of guilt and suffering, so you're storing more and more energy as emotion in the second center. You also continue to broadcast a specific energetic signature carrying specific information through the second energy center into your body's energy field. So now let's say that you start having a totally different set of thoughts. What happens if you have sexual fantasies about someone? Now you're turning on a different network of neurons in your brain, and you're producing a different level of mind. And just as before, if you get enough of those networks firing and wiring, you're going to get a different internal representation in the frontal lobe of your brain. And once the thought or image you are paying attention to becomes more real than your outer world, in that moment the thought literally becomes the experience, and the end product of that experience is the corresponding feeling. As a result, your body gets turned on. That center now is activated with a specific energy carrying a specific message or intent, which then turns on the individual plexus of neurons in that center to produce a specific mind, which then signals genes in the corresponding glands to make chemicals and hormones equal to those thoughts. Now you're convinced you're the stud or vixen of the universe. And if you accept, believe, and surrender to that thought or image of yourself without any analysis, then those neurotransmitters in the brain will begin to influence a different blend of neuropeptides in the limbic brain. They'll signal hormones in the first energy center, programming the autonomic nervous system to prepare that center to become activated. I think you're very familiar with the biological effects that happen next. Those biological reactions will cause you to keep feeling a certain way, and you're going to think more corresponding thoughts equal to that feeling. And now you're storing energy in the first center, and you are broadcasting a vibrational signature carrying a specific message from that center into the energy field in your body. Your brain is monitoring how you are feeling, and you're going to generate even more corresponding thoughts. And the cycle continues. This is how the body responds to the mind, and ultimately becomes the mind. So now you understand how your thoughts condition your body to become the mind of whatever emotion you're experiencing, and how, when that happens, you're storing more energy in the corresponding energy center for that emotion. The center where the majority of that energy gets stored is the one associated with the emotions you have been repeatedly experiencing. If you are overly lustful, overly sexed, or overly preoccupied with wanting to be seen by others as sexually desirable, your energy is stuck in your first center. If you experience an overabundance of guilt, sadness, fear, depression, shame, unworthiness, low self-esteem, suffering, and pain, your energy will become stuck in your second center. And if you have problems with anger, aggression, frustration, control issues, judgment, or self-importance, your energy is stuck in your third center. Hopefully, by now, you have done the Blessing of the Energy Centers meditation and have begun to experience how the energy in each of your centers is able to evolve from one center to the next, increasing its frequency as it moves up. In time, the body becomes the mind of that emotion, and once that energy as an emotion is stored, or more accurately, once it becomes trapped, in one or more of the lower energy centers, then the body is literally in the past. This means you no longer have energy available to create a new destiny. When that happens, your body becomes more matter and less energy because, as you have read, the first three centers, which are based on survival emotions, shrink the vital field of energy surrounding your body. To be clear, I'm not saying that you shouldn't ever have sex, enjoy food, or even feel stressed. What I am saying is that when you are out of balance, it's because these first three centers are out of balance. And imagine if all three of these survival centers become overstimulated all at once. You can easily see how your body's energy would diminish over time. When that happens, there's not much available energy for growth, repair, healing, creation, or even just returning to balance. By the same means, many people who feel out of balance may retreat from their lives and limit the amount of food they eat. By digesting less food, their body has more energy to balance itself. They may also abstain from sexual intercourse for a period of time to allow the body to restore itself. During their retreat, they will also remove themselves from the constant stimulation they normally receive from their environment, including their friends, kids, co-workers, appointments and schedules, job, computers, homes, and cell phones. This helps the body keep from reacting, consciously or unconsciously, to all those familiar elements in their outer world that they associate with thoughts and emotional memories from the past. The breath technique I'm about to teach you gives you a way to liberate that trapped energy that's stored in the first three centers so it can be free to flow to the brain from whence it came. And when you use the breath to liberate those emotions, that energy becomes available for higher purposes. You'll have more energy to heal yourself, create a different life, manifest more wealth, or have a mystical experience, to name just a few possibilities. Those emotions that are stored in the body as energy will be transmuted into a different type of energy, carrying a different message through the elevated emotions of inspiration, freedom, unconditional love, and gratitude. It's the same energy, it's just locked up in the body. The breath is a way to pull the mind out of the body. You will be using your body as an instrument of consciousness to ascend your energy, turning those survival emotions into creative emotions. As you free your body from the chains of the past and liberate this energy, you have available energy to do the uncommon, to achieve the supernatural. The body as a magnet. Think about a magnet as you look at figure 5.3. Magnets, of course, have polarity. They each have a north pole and a south pole. One end has a positive charge, and the other end has a negative charge. The polarity between the ends of a magnet is what causes the magnet to produce an electromagnetic field. The stronger the polarity between the two poles, the larger the electromagnetic field the magnet produces. You can't see that electromagnetic field, but it exists, and it can be measured. The strength of a magnet's electromagnetic field can even influence matter. If you were to take tiny metal shavings and lay them on a piece of paper, put another piece of paper over the first piece of paper, and then set a magnet on top of that second piece of paper, those metal shavings would organize themselves within the magnet's electromagnetic field. The electromagnetic field of the magnet is powerful enough to affect material reality, even though the frequency of this field exists beyond your senses. Figure 5.4 illustrates this. The Earth is a magnet. And like any other magnet, it has a north pole and a south pole, as well as an electromagnetic field surrounding it. While this field itself is invisible, we're all familiar with one amazing way to see that it exists. The Earth's electromagnetic field deflects the sun's photons. During a solar flare or mass coronal ejection, that field deflects trillions of tons of photons hurled towards the Earth in a pulsating, colorful phenomenon known as the Northern Lights. Your body is also a magnet. Ancient cultures, especially Asian cultures, have known this for thousands of years. Your north pole is your mind and brain, and your south pole is your body at the base of your spine. When you're living by the hormones of stress, the emotions of survival, or when you're overutilizing the other two survival energy centers, you are constantly drawing energy from this invisible field. The energy then no longer flows through the body because the body, in survival mode, is pulling the energy from the field and storing it in the body. Specifically in the first three energy centers. This is what happens when the thinking-feeling loop we talked about earlier is activated. If this goes on long enough, the body won't have any electrical charge running through it at all, and without an electrical charge, it can't create the field of electromagnetic energy that normally surrounds it. When that happens, the body is no longer like a magnet. Now it's like a piece of ordinary metal, a magnet that's lost its charge. As you can see in figure 5.5, the body then becomes more matter and less energy, or more particle and less wave. Of course, if there were a way to get this energy that's stored in the first three centers moving again, the current would resume flowing and the body would recreate the electromagnetic field. The breath does just that. It gives us a way to pull the mind out of the body and to move all that stored energy from the first three centers up the spine to the brain, restoring the electromagnetic field surrounding the body. Once that happens, we can use that energy for things other than survival. Let's take a look at the way our physical bodies are constructed so we can understand what makes that possible. Take a look at figure 5.6. You have a bone at the base of your spine called your sacrum that looks like an upside-down triangle with a plateau on the top. On the top of that flat surface sits the spinal column, which extends all the way up to your skull. Inside that closed system is the central nervous system, which is made up of the brain and the spinal cord. The spinal cord is actually an extension of your brain. The skull and the spinal column protect this most delicate system. The central nervous system is one of your body's most important systems because it controls and coordinates all the other systems in the body. Without the aid of the central nervous system, you couldn't digest your food, you couldn't void your bladder, you couldn't move your body and your heart couldn't beat. You couldn't even blink your eyes without the nervous system. So you can think of the nervous system as the electrical wiring that runs the machine of your body. Inside this closed system is cerebrospinal fluid that's filtered from the blood in the brain. This fluid bathes the brain and the spinal cord, and it's responsible for giving the central nervous system buoyancy. It acts as a cushion to protect the brain and spinal cord from trauma, and it flows in various rivers and paths that transport nutrients and chemicals to different parts of the nervous system all over the body. By its very nature, this fluid acts as a conduit to enhance electrical charges in the nervous system. Now let's go back to your sacrum. Every time you inhale, that sacrum bone flexes back slightly, and every time you exhale, it flexes forward just a little bit. This is an extremely subtle movement, too subtle for you to notice even if you try, but it happens. And at the same time you inhale, the sutures of your skull, the joints between the individual plates of your skull, which fit together like pieces of a puzzle and give the skull a degree of flexibility, open up just slightly, and as you exhale, they close back up. Again, this is extremely subtle. You can't feel it happening. The movement of your sacrum back and forth as you slowly breathe in and out, along with the sutures of the skull opening and closing, propagates a wave within the fluid of this closed system, and it slowly pumps that cerebrospinal fluid up your spine all the way to the brain, passing through four chambers called cerebral aqueducts or ventricles. If you were to tag one molecule of cerebrospinal fluid and follow it from the base of your spine all the way up to your brain and then all the way back down to your sacrum, you'd see that it would take 12 hours to make a complete circuit. So in essence, you flush your brain twice a day. Check out figure 5.7 to see what that looks like. So think about what would happen if you contracted the intrinsic muscles of your perineum, your pelvic floor, the same muscles you use for intercourse and elimination, and you locked them down, and then while they were locked down, you next contracted the muscles of your lower abdomen, locking those muscles down, and then you did the same with the muscles of your upper abdomen. If you kept squeezing and contracting those muscles in your first three energy centers by contracting your core muscles, that fluid in your central nervous system would move up, as illustrated in figure 5.8. You'd be moving that cerebrospinal fluid in your central nervous system up your spine. Each time you tighten the muscles of those centers, the fluid would be forced upward. Now imagine you then placed your attention on the top of your head. Where you place your attention is where you place your energy. So if you put your attention at the top of your head, that would become your target for moving energy. Now think about taking one slow, steady breath through your nose and at the same time squeezing and holding the muscles of your perineum, then those of your lower abdomen, and then those of your upper abdomen, all while following your breath up your spine and through your chest, your throat and your brain, and all the way to the top of your head. Imagine that when you get to the top of your head, you hold your breath as you keep squeezing. You'd be pulling that cerebrospinal fluid all the way up towards your brain. That's significant because cerebrospinal fluid is made up of proteins and salts in solution, and the moment proteins and salts dissolve in solution, they become charged. If you take a charged molecule and accelerate it, as you would if you pulled that molecule up your spine, you create an inductance field. An inductance field is an invisible field of electromagnetic energy that moves in a circular motion in the direction the charged molecules are moving in. The more charged molecules you accelerate, the bigger and more powerful the inductance field. Take a look at figure 5.9 to see what an inductance field looks like. Think of the spinal cord as a fiber optic cable that acts as a two-way highway, simultaneously communicating information from the body to the brain and from the brain to the body. Every second, important information is relayed from your brain to your body, such as the desire to walk across the room or to scratch an itch. At the same instant, A lot of information from the body is carried up your spinal cord toward the brain, such as knowledge of where your body is in space or the signal that you're hungry. Once you accelerate these charged molecules in one direction up the spine, the resulting inductance field will reverse the current of information flowing from the brain down through the body, and it will then draw energy from the lower three centers up the spine to the brain. Take a look at figure 5.10a to see how that works. Now there's a current running through the body in the central nervous system, just like a magnet, and as a result, the same kind of electromagnetic field of energy that surrounds a magnet surrounds the body, as you can see in figure 5.10b. The field of electromagnetic energy you've created is a three-dimensional field, and as it moves, this energy creates a torsion field or a torus field. By the way, the shape of this electromagnetic field is a familiar pattern in the universe. This pattern shows up in the shape of an apple, as well as in the shape of a black hole in a distant galaxy. See figure 5.11. So now you understand that by doing this breathing technique, you're starting to stir up all this stored energy in a very big way. And if you do this technique correctly, and you do it enough times, you are going to wake up a sleeping dragon. Evolving the energy to the brain. Once this energy becomes activated, the sympathetic nervous system, a subsystem of your autonomic nervous system that arouses the brain and body in response to a threat in your outer environment, turns on, and energy begins to move up from the body's lower three energy centers to the brain. But instead of the body being aroused because of some external condition, you are turning on the sympathetic nervous system by passionately engaging the breath from within. As the sympathetic nervous system starts to merge with the parasympathetic nervous system, another subset of your autonomic nervous system that relaxes your brain and body, such as after a big meal, it is as if traveling energy from the lower centers is ejaculated into the brain. When this energy reaches the brainstem, a gate called the thalamic gate opens up and all that energy is permitted to enter the brain. Once this energy that was initially stored in the body enters the brain produces gamma brainwave patterns. We've recorded many students producing gamma brainwaves during this breathing technique. Gamma brainwaves, which I call superconsciousness, are notable not only because they produce the highest amount of energy of all the brainwaves, but also because that energy comes from within the body instead of being released in reaction to a stimulus in the environment, the outer world. In contrast, the brain produces high-range beta brainwaves when the body releases stress hormones, allowing you to be super alert to danger in your environment. In beta, the outer world seems more real than your inner world, while gamma waves create a similar type of arousal in the brain, which then causes a heightened sense of awareness, consciousness, attention, and energy related to more creative, transcendental, or mystical experiences. The difference is that in gamma, whatever is happening in your inner world becomes much more real to you than many experiences you've had in your outer world. Take a look at figure 5.12 and review how similar beta and gamma brainwaves are. Many of our students who do this breath technique produce significant high beta brainwaves on their way to the gamma range, the highest frequency brainwaves, or they may simply stay in these very high level beta states. We're finding that being in the highest levels of beta can also signal that the person is paying more attention to their inner world than their outer world. In addition to seeing more energy in the brain after this breathing technique, we have also repeatedly observed more significant amounts of brain coherence. Take a look at graphics 6A and 6B in the color insert. You can see two students who have done the breath successfully. They have very high-frequency beta brainwaves that transition to gamma brainwaves. Notice the high amplitudes of their brainwaves in gamma. The higher the amplitudes, the higher the energy in their brains. The students demonstrate 160 and 260 standard deviations above typical gamma brainwaves. To give you a reference, 3 standard deviations above normal is usually considered high. In graphics 6A, 4, you can also witness much more brain coherence after the breath. The red patterns in the brain show extremely high amounts of brain coherence in every measured brainwave state. As you do this powerful breathing technique, you are drawing the energy that's been stored in those lower three centers, the energy you use for orgasm and to make a baby, to digest a meal, to run from a predator, and instead of releasing it out into chemistry, you're going to draw it up your spine like you would draw fluid up a straw and release it into your brain. In fact, there's a tube of energy or light called the prana tube running along your spinal column.